Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is the one, the only, Tom Wright. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here.
No, it's great. So, you know, Tom, you're the founder of Turning 65 Workshop. You've been on the show before. Give us an update on the workshop. How's it doing?
It's going great. There is no shortage of interest. I'm doing a lot more training of HR and benefits teams now, still continuing to present to employees, but I find there's a lot of interest in kind of training the trainers so that they can because employees are coming to them. These aging employees are coming to them looking for assistance, looking for help with questions related to Social Security and Medicare, and equipping the team to be in a position to be an effective.
So let's recap. What is the Turning 65 workshop? Let's go back for just a minute to refresh our audience. Yep. What is the workshop? And I know you have two of them. And how do they provide value to organizations?
Sure. It's in a simple terms, I call it a Social Security and Medicare learning program. It can be done in different formats. It can be done to employees in the workplace. It can be done for HR and benefits teams. I've done them for financial advisors and accountants and different other professional groups. What it does is it brings non-biased, non-agenda. There's no sales going on with this. This is purely education. And I bring, hopefully, easy to understand, targeted insights about these essential programs. I mean, the foundation of retirement in America is built on Social Security and Medicare, and yet very few people have a confident understanding of them. And so what I'm trying to do is help people gain confidence and better understand how these programs work.
And your background, for again, to refresh the audience?
Yeah, I spent over 35 years in the financial services world, the majority of that doing employee benefits, both as a broker and a consultant. So I was dealing with a lot of this in real time with real people sitting across conference tables, sitting across kitchen tables, and seeing people struggle, really, really struggle with trying to understand what decisions they should make, how these programs worked, and there's a lot at stake. This time of life, there's a lot at stake. And increasingly, we have people who are still working when they're turning 65 and beyond. And so you introduce the element of the group health plan now. That's colliding with Medicare eligibility. What do you do? All those kind of issues. And that's what drove me to start these programs.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly as we all get older and as we all think about turning 65, you know, it's a thought, right? We think more about it, especially as we get older. You know, it's interesting. I know 65 seems to be the number, but I'm pretty sure from my age group, I'm 54, right? So as I get to 65, I think it's 67 or 68 who I'm actually eligible. Is that different for Medicare versus Social Security?
So I want to grab that before it goes out over the airwaves and causes any confusion. You're exactly right. There are two different target ages, if you will, and they differ between Social Security and Medicare. So Medicare is fixed at age 65. There is talk about lowering it to 55, but those proposals are likely to not succeed at this point. So you're going to have to deal with Medicare at age 65. Your decision may be to defer Medicare. But it's an issue that you confront specifically at the age of 65, unlike Social Security, which is really kind of it's a moving target, if you will. There are two pieces. Number one, you can file as early as 62 for Social Security. But what you were just referencing is the full retirement age issue. And that is it used to be 65 years ago. It's currently age 66. But for baby boomers born after 1960, full retirement age for Social Security retirement benefits, which is the age at which you don't take a reduced benefit, that's age 67.
Got it. And so certainly as – and that's going to continue to index is my understanding. It's going to go to 68, correct?
No, no. Okay. It stays at 60.
And again, we're talking – proposals to do this.
So Social Security is – that has been in place since 1983, this graduated extension of the full retirement age. There is talk about the millennials and Generation X or whatever pushing it out even further. What you may be thinking of is the ability that you have to defer – voluntarily defer filing at your full retirement age. And if you do that, you can actually gain an enhanced benefit by delaying as far out potentially as age 70.
Right, 70 is the max, if I understand.
70, yeah. You don't ever have to file for Social Security. Warren Buffett has famously said that he's not taking Social Security because he doesn't need it.
I don't think he needs.
He's leaving all of his FICA contributions in there in the trust fund.
He needs that, but it's all right.
But those enhanced credits that accumulated 8% per year beyond your full retirement age, those only go out to age 70.
And one last question on that. Do they max at 70? In other words, if you waited to 71, do you get another percent each?
No.
So 70 is the absolute highest.
To get those enhanced credits, those only go to 70. If you delayed beyond 70, you'd still receive the cost of living that would be applied to your benefit for those years that you wait. But in practical terms, very, very few people, Warren Buffett notwithstanding, apply for Social Security retirement benefits beyond the age of 70.
Okay.
There's no real incentive to do
so. And we're talking with Tom Wright, founder of Turning 65 Workshop. So today, of course, we're going to be talking a little bit more about Medicare. So working at 65, what about Medicare is our topic today. Though I will probably go back and forth a little bit between Social Security because there is this misnomer, I think, of the two programs and the challenges of understanding the differences between the two and what it means and what it maximizes. So let's recap. What is Medicare specifically? Mm-hmm. Right. Let's get a definition of it. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the history of it. Let's talk about the size and scope of it. Let's talk about what it means, what it matters. Let's get a little history.
Sure. So this is really interesting to me. Medicare, and very, very few people really understand this, but Medicare is actually the health insurance that you get with Social Security. So when you qualify for Social Security benefits, you're entitled to Social Security retirement benefits. At age 65, if you take them early, you can't get Medicare because you've got to wait till 65. You get, along with your monthly retirement check, you get health insurance known as Medicare. Medicare is actually Title 18 of the Social Security Act. And that's an important thing to understand. And this explains a lot why, for example, up until recently, your Medicare ID number was your Social Security number with a suffix on the end of it, why you apply for Medicare through the Social Security website. It's actually bolted onto or baked into the retirement benefit that you get with Social Security. So Medicare is part of Social Security. And that goes back to its inception. There's an interesting history with Medicare. In 1935, Social Security was enacted. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the New Deal, we're familiar with that story, is a major milestone in American history. At the same time, there was a push for national health insurance. And in the original drafting of the Social Security legislation, there was one line authorizing the study of a national health insurance plan program. The American Medical Association vehemently objected, to put it nicely. And rather than risk having the whole Social Security thing go down in flames, FDR pulled that line from the legislation. Social Security was enacted in 1935. However, the push for national health insurance in the United States at that time, other industrialized countries were doing it, didn't go away. And Harry Truman took up the cause in the late 40s, early 1950s. And what he decided, this is the interesting thing, he made a tactical political decision in the early 1950s that Social Security had been well received by the public at that point. It had been around for about 15 years. And it was not viewed as welfare. It was viewed as an earned benefit. And that helped the public accept Social Security. And so in this quest for national health insurance, he made the determination that it would be most likely to succeed if instead of going for the whole enchilada, they went just for a segment of the population, and the decision was made to target the elderly. And so the idea was hatched to kind of piggyback Medicare, a health insurance benefit, onto Social Security. It took the better part of 15 years for that to get all the way across the end zone, you know, to get across the goal line.
Sure.
And in 1965, Medicare was created to provide health insurance for the elderly as part of their Social Security benefit. Medicaid, an anti-poverty program, was also created at that time, which was part of the Great War on Poverty. So it was a big, it was a time in America where that all came together. But it was this idea that it wasn't welfare and that Medicare would be something that the elderly would get as part of their Social Security benefit, which explains why they're so closely related.
Interesting. You know, I was going to ask about Medicaid because people do get confused between Medicare and Medicaid. So one's a poverty program, one's a earned benefit, you might say, right?
In terms that's true, yeah. Yeah.
Right, in terms of the two different programs. Okay. So Medicare, this program that everybody is eligible for at age 65, you can opt in, opt out. How does that work?
So as you said, most people, there are some people who, for whatever reason, their citizenship status or they have not worked and they don't have enough credit, so they've got to pay for it. But by and large, it's a program that the vast majority of Americans qualify for when they're 65. It is an opt-in process unless you have taken Social Security early and you're already receiving your Social Security retirement check upon turning 65, which, again, today those folks, to get a full benefit, it's 66. So these are folks who took it at 62, 63, 64, and they're already receiving Social Security at 65. If that's the case, they will be automatically enrolled in Medicare. It's part of their Social Security. And upon turning 65, Medicare is automatically put in there, and the cost of Medicare Part B is taken from their Social Security checks. But if you have not yet taken Social Security upon turning age 65, you haven't taken your Social Security retirement check, for those folks, it becomes an opt-in. You have to actively opt into the program.
One of the questions that might come up is that you can sometimes get Social Security benefits for disabilities, mm-hmm. or for death of a spouse in certain situations. Mm-hmm. How does that play into somebody who takes those benefits early? They might take it in their 50s because of, right. of a disability of some sort. How does that play into the whole Medicare, you know, option?
So those two examples you gave would be the two common ones. Folks who are disabled and qualify for Social Security disability benefits, which to do that, and I won't go through the definition, but it has to be a significant disability. Once you go through a 5-month waiting period, you then have to receive Social Security disability benefits for 24 months. At that point, you're now 29 months into your disability. At that point, you also become entitled to Medicare, which is why sometimes people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s who are disabled and receiving Social Security disability are also receiving Medicare benefits. For folks who are surviving widows or widowers, they can actually take that benefit as early as age 60. However, they do not automatically qualify for Medicare like a disabled person. They still have to wait till 65. They would get a Social Security survivor check, but they would have to wait to get Medicare until the normal age 65.
It's a lot of layers.
Oh, that we're just scratching the surface.
Yeah, we haven't even. And I understand, but that's just how it is. And of course, that's because we're talking with Tom Bright, founder of Turning 65 Workshops. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, You know, it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsinME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsinME.com. That's JobsinME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Tom Wright, founder of Turning 65 Workshop. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking about working at 65. What about Medicare? That's our topic today. And I bet some of you are out there going, really? Medicare? Seriously? Hey, it's coming faster than you think, people. Just remember, all you 30s and 20-year-olds, you're going to be 65 someday. That's all I have to say about it. And as I get closer to it, Tom, I might say that this is becoming more and more interesting. That's all I have to say. And Debbie over here and our producers going, I'm very interested. Very, very interested. Okay, we're moving on to the next part of the show. It's, you know, we've talked a little about the history of Medicare. We've talked a little about eligibility. Give me the structure of Medicare. Give me a overview of how it works, the overall option structure. Go through the whole process.
Sure. The big picture of Medicare, which, again, is not really well understood by most Americans, even those who are receiving Medicare, is Medicare is a dual choice arrangement. Folks who are working, they have dual options for their health plan, multiple options. Medicare is essentially a similar type of dual choice arrangement. And it has four parts. But that's a little misleading in practical terms because it really divides in half. One option is what's called original Medicare. That's Medicare Part A for hospital-based care, Part B, which is medical services, physicians, labs, outpatient services, and then Medicare Part D, which is the prescription drug benefit. That, along with a Medicare supplement or Medigap private insurance policy to cover all the deductibles of Part A and Part B, that arrangement that I've just described is known as original Medicare. That's what the Medicare program largely has been since it was created. Parts A and B were the original parts of Medicare. Those benefits are administered down in Baltimore, Maryland. I say that it is the government option of this dual choice arrangement, and I don't say that pejoratively. It means that the claims and all of the paperwork, everything is administered by the federal government, by the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The other option, the other part of the dual choice, is what's known as Medicare Advantage. Technically, Medicare Advantage is Medicare Part C. And Medicare Advantage, these are private health plans which contract with Medicare to provide medical services to Medicare recipients. But for folks who choose to go this route, they're going to be covered by a private health plan. They're going to have a health care ID card from that health plan. When they have claims, they're going to deal with that health plan. They're going to have their claims processed by that health plan. And what Medicare will do is actually send a block amount of money for each Medicare recipient that these Medicare Advantage plans are covering to cover the cost. In other words, these private Medicare Advantage enrollees have opted out of the government-administered plan, original Medicare. So all those FICA contributions, all the money that's there in their account, and there's air quotes around that,
yep,
those funds are going to be sent from Medicare over to that private health plan. The average nationally is in the low $700 per month range. And so that private health plan gets a sum of money each month to cover, to provide services for these Medicare recipients. These are typically managed care plans, not always, but the overwhelming majority are HMOs, PPOs, things of that nature. And in most states, you have a half a dozen to a dozen Medicare Advantage private health plan options that people can choose from in addition to the original. You know, choose one or the other, either original Medicare or one
can
of these
private
options.
Can you go between the two? Can you, if you choose one?
So that's a really good question. And again, it's the kind of thing we talk about in our workshops. Medicare will allow you to do that. However, the essential component of an original Medicare arrangement that I described is having one of those private Medigap policies, because there are very large deductibles and copays under original Medicare. The ability to switch tracks, as it were, and go back and forth is not limited by Medicare, but there are limitations in most states on your ability to go back and choose one to qualify for one of those private Medigap policies. After a certain period of time, you lose what's called your guaranteed purchase right. And so those companies can subject you to a health examine, you know, a screening profile. And if you're not healthy, they're going to turn you down, which effectively is going to preclude you from doing the original Medicare track. Because without one of those policies, you're looking at a real, potentially, if you get really sick, a very significant amount of money.
So when somebody's looking at these options, right, they're looking at, do I go with A, B, and D, or C, right? And I'm assuming, does D go with C as well? Does D go with both?
Usually Part D drug plans are built in. They're
okay,
bolted
they're
into
built. And I know that's relatively new. I know that was during the Bush era. All right, so you have a choice of A or B or C. We'll assume D is in both. How does one make a decision? Is it pure financial decision, or is it both particularly cover virtually the same thing, considering it's, you know, a block grant of money coming over? I mean, these are all great questions.
So the typical person who's faced with this often does not know the answer to that, right? And when I'm doing the workshops, I'm doing them for folks who are pre-retirees or early stage. So they're still working. And the issue that comes into play for them is they've got their group health plan. How does that affect?
Right.
And that takes it in a whole different direction. But purely from a diagram, chalkboard discussion, original Medicare versus Medicare Advantage, the issues are these. Number one, what about access to providers? And under original Medicare, you can go to any medical provider in the United States who accepts Medicare. Under a Medicare Advantage plan, overwhelmingly, those are managed care plans. So you're going to be working within a managed care environment.
Network, yeah.
And for some people, that's a big deal. For others, it's not. Then you come into the whole issue of cost. The premium cost for an original Medicare plan or original Medicare arrangement includes the Part B premium that you have to pay, which currently is $134 a month or higher. It also includes the drug plan Part D cost, which can be $20 to $100 a month, somewhere in there. Usually they're on the lower end unless you have expensive medications. And then there's also the Medigap policy, and those can be $150 to $225 a month.
That can eat up your Social Security pretty quick.
It can. And if you're talking a couple, now you're talking two people at these rates. And one of the attractive parts of Medicare Advantage is you don't have to pay for that separate Medigap policy or that separate drug policy.
Gotcha.
You still pay the Part B premium, but you don't pay those added costs. So you end up with original Medicare that's more expensive, but more comprehensive, generally speaking. There is a higher potential out-of-pocket with a Medicare Advantage plan in most cases, but those plans also offer some extras like dental, vision, hearing benefits, and so forth. Those type of benefits can be an added incentive. So in some sense, it's almost the classic health insurance choice. You're paying more in most cases for original Medicare, but you have more comprehensive, less out-of-pocket in most cases.
No, that makes sense. And we're talking with Tom Wright, founder of the Turning 65 Workshop. I'm your host, David Shulo. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. And we're talking about working at 65. What about Medicare? So, Tom, you've kind of given a good overview of the options and the processes, A, B, C, S. I feel like I'm in grade school. So when companies are talking to you about doing workshops and they're saying, hey, our employees don't understand Medicare. Heck, we don't understand Medicare. But we have a lot of retirees getting ready to retire or consider retiring or on the cusp of retiring or thinking about retiring. What are some of the most common questions that employers ask you in preparing you for that conversation?
Yeah, that's really good. And that's really a good glimpse into what I'm doing and what I'm the kind of conversations that I'm having. I think for most employers, I'll be more specific, for most HR and benefits professionals, there is a level of uncertainty. They're being asked a lot of complex questions. They're finding it difficult to find the answers. And therefore, they're not feeling confident when employees are coming to them. This is all inherently complex because it's Medicare. It's just going to be complex. And so a lot of the conversations that I have, number one, I always begin by the description that I just gave you about original Medicare, Medicare Advantage, kind of make sure everybody has a solid understanding of the basic structure of the program. And I do that whether it's training the HR and benefits team or whether it's doing a presentation directly to the employees. But beyond that, it then kind of goes into some very specific areas that often cause confusion and concern. And those areas really break down into a few specific areas. Number one, I'm still planning to work. Will I be penalized if I delay taking my Medicare? And how do I enroll if I'm enrolling beyond age 65? So we get into the whole issue of the initial enrollment, the special enrollment, having creditable coverage, how that process works. And we do it in simple to understand terms. There are also some very specific issues that cause a lot of confusion surrounding health savings accounts, surrounding COBRA, surrounding drug benefits, comparing a Medicare drug arrangement with a drug arrangement under the group health plan. Those particular areas come up a lot. We also go into this whole issue of high-income earners who are now paying more for their Medicare. So under Part A of Medicare, the hospital-based coverage, that's fully paid up. When you finally start receiving Medicare benefits, you don't pay for Part A. That's been pre-funded by your FICA contributions over your working years. But Part B does require a premium, and it's structured each year. Medicare sets the amounts. It's 25% of the overall anticipated program cost per member per month. Currently, it's $134 a month. However, for individuals who earn over $85,000 or a person who's married and is filing jointly, earning double that, $170,000 or more, that then goes to 35%. And it goes all the way up to those at $160,000 single or $320,000 joint, filing jointly. The cost there is $428 a month plus a surcharge on your Part D. So this issue of paying high-income earners, which are often the executives, they're the C-suite people, they need to be prepared to potentially pay more. And as the pressure on Medicare, the financial pressure, continues to grow, that potential for high-income earners to be paying much, much more for their Medicare is likely to continue to increase. And so those are some of the areas that we often will delve into.
Sure. And when you're talking to employers and they're saying, okay, Tell me the ROI for my organization for the employees. What is that?
In terms of offering the workshops? Well, this is a big issue, and they have a lot of employees who are affected by it. I've kind of surveyed a lot of my clients that I've worked with, and they kind of are – the number I hear a lot is age 58 is kind of the median employee age. And so these people are now – it's not stuff they thought about in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and now they're thinking about it a lot. They're thinking about Social Security. They're thinking about Medicare. They don't know where to get the answers. And so the return on investment is being able to provide that in-house, to have an HR and benefits team or to have an outside presenter come in with no agenda, not trying to sell things to them. They come away with a real high level of appreciation and satisfaction, and are often very expressive of their gratitude to the employer for being the resource that's helped them.
Right, and that's the benefit, right? You're helping your employees think about their future, and they've got enough to worry about. You know, they're looking at their financial situation, their 401k, their IRA, their what are they going to do when they retire, what is their living arrangement, what are their costs, what are their expenses, how much will Social Security pay, how much will it really pay. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the questions that gets asked is Social Security taxable. It is, correct?
Partially.
Yeah, isn't that amazing when you think
taxable,
about it? Yes.
Yeah. I also would point out that all those concerns that you were just describing, even though these employees may not personally be, because they're pre-retirees in the most cases, late 50s, early 60s, so they're anticipating this, but they're seeing it with their parents,
no question,
who are in their mid, late 80s or older, and they're seeing the very real effects of the importance of Social Security and Medicare in their parents' lives.
We're talking with Tom Wright, founder of Turning 65 Workshop. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsNME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsNME.com. That's JobsNME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Imagine
hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet, watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing, dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom again. So get the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Tom Wright, and he is the founder of Turning 65 Workshop. I'm your host, David Chulo, and again, you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're talking about working at 65. What about Medicare? You know, I'm going to jump back to the beginning of the show when we talked about working after 65 for just a second, because more and more employees have decided to say, hey, you know, I can certainly work past 65. I think my wife has told me there's no way you're not working till you're 98, because that means you're going to be home and mess up my routine. And that's fine. That's fine, dear. I love you, too. So when people think about what that means for the amount of income they can earn, right? Because typically you're making a decent income in your 60s. You're at the peak, even though technically I suppose peak years are 50s, but you're still probably typically making a solid income as long as your health is there. Or you may have some issues and you've gone part-time or work for a nonprofit and giving back, right? When people think about the financial implications, when they think about Medicare, when they think about Social Security, is there something that jumps out at you when you talk to people that they're really confused about?
I do think the central issue really is, what about health insurance here? What should I be doing about health insurance, assuming that health insurance through the employer is an option? And so that's where a lot of the conversation happens. And, you know, the decision, the evaluation, the process of deciding whether to disengage from the employer group health plan and solely rely on one of those two Medicare tracks, or whether to retain the group health plan and defer either all of your Medicare or just part of your Medicare, has several facets to it, and it's different for everybody. It depends on how expensive that group health plan is from the employer. It depends on how rich the benefits are on that group health plan. One of the things that has created an enormous amount of confusion and has really helped give me opportunities to go in and teach on this is the advent of the rise of health savings accounts and how many employers now, private employers particularly, offer them and contribute a sum of money into them for their employees. And there are an awful lot of 65-year-olds who are healthy, who are still planning to work a few more or several more years, who don't want to lose that health savings account contribution. And unfortunately, under the way the laws governing health savings accounts were set up, as soon as you engage with Medicare, you can no longer, or that health savings account can no longer receive new contributions. So for that 65-year-old who's maybe getting $1,500 a year put into their health savings account by their employer, they can also put their own money in on top of that. That goes out the door as soon as they engage with Medicare. They can still continue to withdraw funds from it, but they can no longer have new funds added into it. And so those people are increasingly saying, well, then I want to defer Medicare. I don't want to get engaged with Medicare. And so they'll end up deferring both Parts A and Parts B. They'll either of those dual choices, they'll stay off Medicare altogether until they subsequently come off of that employer group health plan. But there's a lot to evaluate in that, the prescription drug piece. And so that's part of the teaching that I'll do, is trying to help people understand what the issues are and how to make those decisions.
It is a lot to think about. There's no question about it. I mean, Retirement itself is a lot to think about. People just, you know, what am I going to do? You can only play so many rounds of golf. You know, it can only take so many trips. And yet you have a fixed income at that point because you have what you have. And that's an interesting dilemma. And healthcare costs are a big piece of that equation, because they are certainly not going down.
It's the number one cost in retirement, according to a number of surveys. The biggest single cost in retirement is healthcare.
Yeah. When somebody is thinking about Medicare and they're on Medicaid because of their poverty issue, how does that play into it?
Very common, actually, in much of Maine here where we are, but also across the country. There are many people who qualify for Medicare because of their age, but they're also what are called low-income elderly, so they also receive Medicaid benefits. So they have both Medicare and Medicaid. Those are referred to, those folks are called dual eligibles. And Medicare is the primary benefit that they receive, but Medicaid is secondary, and Medicaid comes in and provides benefits that Medicare does not cover. covers the deductibles and the copays, certain drug expenses and so forth. And I'm told that in certain parts, again, I'm speaking here in Maine where we are, but there are areas of Maine where upwards of 40% of those over age 65 are not just on Medicare, but they're duly eligible for Medicaid also. This is a very common situation. One other thing, too, that I don't want to belabor it, but the one other area that comes up and is often a point of confusion is Medicare does not provide, as a general matter, nursing home benefits or long-term care benefits. There is some home care benefit. There's a limited skilled rehabilitation benefit coming directly out of a hospital for 100 days. But by and large, the typical nursing home scenario that we think of is not covered by Medicare. If you are low-income elderly, you do qualify for nursing home benefits under Medicaid. And that has spawned a whole industry of legal trust planning where folks who are essentially middle income or even higher, through trust planning, put their assets in a trust so that they can qualify for Medicaid nursing home benefits. That's a whole separate discussion a little above my pay grade. But that's an irony that often confuses people. And one of the things we talk about, that's a significant exclusion under Medicare. People are like, well, if I end up in a nursing home or assisted living, I'll be covered by Medicare. No, it won't. It won't. And again, the only exception, the only other than private insurance or paying it out of your pocket would be to qualify as a low-income elderly person through Medicaid.
You know, one of the things that people ask is that dental care is really important in regards to one's health. Is dental part of Medicare?
No and yes.
Are you an attorney? Oh, sorry. Yes.
Yeah, my mother wanted me to. Under original Medicare, it is not part of the benefit. If you have damage to your teeth, you know, you fall and you knock some teeth out, that may be covered. But covered under Part B is a medical expense. But typical dental care would not be. However, under original Medicare. However, most, not all, but most Medicare Advantage private health plans, Medicare alternative, those plans typically do provide a dental benefit. So that is available under those plans. And there are individual dental plans that someone who's on original Medicare could purchase. But again, it would add to that already significant cost.
Sure, I understand that. And it makes sense. You know, there's so many, and I might as well ask, how about optical care?
Same. I would give you the same answer. There is a vision benefit on many of those Advantage plans, not on original Medicare, but could be purchased separately.
Is this where states are now looking at grouping together? Associations are looking to group together for health care, right? Is this going to affect the Medicare system in any way, or is this really more concerns for, you know, under 65?
Yeah, exactly. There's a great chasm that exists in the world of health care coverage, health care insurance. There's the whole world of under 65 health insurance. And then there's the whole world of over 65 health insurance, and they really are two different things. And what you just described would be applicable to the under 65.
Okay, I mean, sure, we didn't know if it had any questions for that. You mentioned about high-income earners and how they have to pay more. Mm-hmm. You would call a means test for their premiums. Is there ever a situation where somebody would not pay for Medicare?
Yes, there are Medicare low-income subsidy programs. Many of those dual eligibles that I just described, they would have their premiums covered, assistance to pay the Part B premium, as well as covering any out-of-pocket costs that they might have.
So it's a combination of the dual with the Medicaid, that
correct.
They would be at an income poverty level that they would below a certain point where they wouldn't have to pay for anything.
Right. That's a complex area, as you can imagine.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
probably the most complex area of healthcare from a coverage and administration standpoint than you could be in. And yet those poor folks, literally poor folks, have, you know, unless they have an advocate who can
well,
help
them with
it.
Well, I think that's the question, right? Where does somebody go? I mean, you obviously do the training for organizations and companies. Where does somebody go to get help like that?
The place where they would start would be their local agency on aging. That's a great resource. They do great work. There are, you know, in different states, they're called councils on aging. But typically, the expertise, the education, the practical help is sourced around those organizations.
No, and that makes sense. And we're talking with Tom Wright, founder of the Turning 65 Workshop. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs and ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Tom Wright, founder of Turning 65 Workshop. I'm your host, David Chulo, and we're talking about working at 65. What about Medicare? You know, we've had a great discussion today about Medicare. Gosh knows I've learned a lot just in listening from you today, and I certainly know that organizations would benefit from this information for their employees. You know, I'm going to ask you a long-range question because I think it's important as people talk about this subject. What do you think is the long-term financial stability of the Medicare program?
Good question. It's a question everybody asks. As we're recording this, the trustees report for 2018 was just released a few weeks ago. And in that trustees report, Medicare's full solvency date dropped by 3 years. It dropped from 2029 to 2026. And there are a number of reasons for that, which I won't elaborate in detail here. But bottom line is it has dropped. What is going to happen is this. Part A of Medicare, the hospital-based piece of Medicare, is the focus. And the concern is because that is entirely funded by payroll taxes and some other revenues, unlike Part B, which does receive contributions from the actual Medicare recipients, they pay 25% or more of the premium, Part A is the concern. In 2026, that the projected revenues for Part A are only going to be adequate to cover 91% of the projected benefits. That's going to continue to drop until it gets to about 78% or 75 to 78% around the year 2038. Thereabouts, about 20 years from now. Something has to change.
And the then benefits, it's going back up, though. Is that not correct based upon what I saw in that report? And the reason being is that we certainly know the baby boomers was a bigger generation. Generation X was a smaller generation. Then you get the millennials coming up. My understanding is it gets back up into the numbers once you get to 2040 and so forth, because that next wave comes through.
You get all kinds of crazy. The further out you get, it gets – the numbers are quite interesting. But the bottom line is this, that the problems are solvable. They need to be addressed sooner than later. There's been a tremendous squeeze already on hospitals and other medical providers, increased revenues through higher payroll taxes, having higher income earners pay more, unfortunately, is a big push. But the rebalancing, recalibrating the income and expenditure equation needs to happen in some fashion. The other thing, though, that's important to remember is, again, this is all against the backdrop of economic growth. If the economy grows and continues to grow at a robust, even higher than projected level, then that'll take care of a lot of problems.
Always does.
It'll bring in much. It will, and it'll bring in much more revenue, and so that's important. Conversely, if the economy goes south and we have a repeat of 2008, 2009, heaven forbid, that will really exacerbate the problem. So those would be my two observations. I think, you know, economic growth will solve a lot, and there's got to be some recalibrating, especially with Part A.
So, Tom, people want to get to know about this Turning 65 workshop. Where can they go? Where can they talk to you about this?
Turning65workshop.com.
Very clever.
that would be the place to go. There's a lot of information there, including my contact information. But it's Turning 65, and those would be the numbers 6 and 5, Turning65workshop.com.
No, I appreciate you being on the show today and talking about this. Medicare is not boring. As a matter of fact, it becomes more and more important the older you get, and I appreciate you taking the time today.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave. It's been great being here.
It's been great. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez from VeralDana. Are you considering hiring from a competitor? If so, are you instituting best practices to decrease any possible adverse consequences? During the recruiting period, companies should ask the candidate about any possible legal restrictions on employment as soon as possible. If the employee has a non-competition or non-solicitation provision in his or her current position, it could limit the effectiveness of the employee in the future. If the candidate does have legal restrictions, it may not mean that he or she is no longer a contender for the position, but the company will want to assess whether they qualify as a competitor under the terms of the agreement and assess the likelihood of litigation if the hire were to occur. Speaking to counsel is often prudent, but if you do decide to make the hire, make sure that you are clear with the employee as to what your expectations are and are not with regard to solicitation and use of proprietary information from former employers. Contact a member of VeralDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group to discuss the implications of hiring an employee with contractual restrictions.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.